This is the Real Talk University podcast, where your hosts, Andre and Christian, explore success stories outside of the classroom.
What is going on, Real Talk fam? This is Andre Hagel Jr., your co-host of the podcast. We're happy to have you tuning in to today's episode, our 13th episode of Season 2, which is crazy because this season is absolutely flying by. Just a quick rundown of today's episode. Our guest today is Jonathan Green, an entrepreneur, super successful. And I honestly have to say, this episode, you'll be able to tell just by our genuine reactions throughout the episode, was the most interesting and unique episode of all time, I think, on Real Talk University, and in a good way. So Christian and I had the pleasure of interviewing, you know, this guy that has founded Serve No Master, a coaching platform and online community. And his story you'll hear more about is that he was fired from his dream job at only 29 years old. And he decided to start his own business because he didn't want his destiny and his life situation to be in the hands of someone else. So within 6 months, he was making more than he was at his dream job while doing what he likes to do. And from that, the rest was history. You'll be able to hear more about, you know, the result of his story and how he was able to make it all happen for himself, because it's really unique. Like, I'm talking, like, this is something that, I mean, the guy lives on a tropical island, and that just blown us away. And he's been doing it for the past few years, and he's taught other people how to do it. So you'll definitely want to tune in. And here are three main takeaways from the episode. So the first takeaway is that nobody cares about you as much as you think they do. Although that might be a harsh reality for a lot of you guys to hear, it's just the it's the truth. And the reason he brought this up was just talking about college, on how a lot of people go into college expecting that because they get a degree that they're going to get a job at the end, and it's just not reality. You know, you have a lot of people that I've talked to personally, and it's just a common trend in America, I think, that's becoming more and more evident, is that once you graduate college, there's no certainty that you're going to get that job that they promise you. And there's just a lot that goes into it, and you'll definitely have to tune into how Jonathan describes it. But yeah, no one cares about you as much as you think they do, regardless. The second main takeaway is it oftentimes is easier to sell someone with stories and emotions rather than with all the in-depth technical stuff. So again, this is something that he talked about, how he had a lot of success selling people, such as clients, to join him and sign up for his services when he had to offer. What he just pointed out, which is super key, is all you have to do is know more than your client. And from there, the rest is just sales skills and personal skills. And again, tune in to the episode, because I can't do it justice the way he described it and the stories that he provided to back it up. It's just 100% worth your time to tune in and hear from him, because he's someone that I've never had any idea who he was. He's not really big on Instagram or wherever else you guys might be on, but he knows what he's talking about. He's got a lot of books out, so I think this will be a good one for you guys. And the third and final takeaway is the ultimate freedom in life is being masterless. Again, his brand is called Serve No Master, and that's meaning to have no boss to report to. So being able to create your own income means you never have to ask for a sick day, you never have to show up to an office, and you never have to work overtime for the same set salary. And he just goes on and on and on about why this matters, and actually how to live a masterless life. So I definitely recommend that you guys tune into this episode. If this is the one episode that you do actually listen to fully, make sure this is the one, because there's so many value bombs in here and just such a different perspective that you probably won't hear on any of our other podcasts or any of the other podcasts out there. So I'm really excited to get your guys' feedback on this one. But without further ado, enjoy our interview with Jonathan Green. How's it going, Real Talk fam? I just wanted to jump in here real quick before we start this new episode of Real Talk University with an offer that Christian and I have put together for you guys. Basically, as a thank you for listening and tuning into all of our episodes and supporting us along the way so far. So what we put together is the Podcast Blueprint ebook, which you'll have access to for free. Absolutely free. This is a downloadable PDF containing all the information, actionable steps, tips, resources, everything you need to launch your very own successful podcast in 30 days or less, exactly how Christian and I have done so. After reading our ebook, you'll be able to launch your own podcast today, book your dream guest for your interviews, and get ads and sponsors immediately. To claim your free copy today, visit the link at bit.ly/RTU ebook. That's bit.ly/RTU ebook. EBOOK. Get your free copy today before this offer expires. Cool. So this is the Real Talk University podcast. My name's Andre. I'm here with my co-host Christian. And basically, we're a podcast for college student entrepreneurs. And our goal and aim of the show is to interview people like yourself. So hopefully that our audience can be inspired to do more outside of the classroom in terms of entrepreneurial ventures. So if you could just introduce who you are, what you do, and what you're currently up to the audience, it'd be great.
Sure. I'm Jonathan Green. I run a business called Serve No Master, which is all about starting your own business, not having anyone tell you what to do. And it's given me the opportunity to live on a small tropical island in the South Pacific.
That's sweet. And how did you originally come up with the idea for Serve No Master? Like, what's the story behind that?
I was changing my brands and kind of making some changes to the business. And I was like, what would be a cool name? And I went through just tons of names looking for something that was available. And actually, Serve No Master comes from a Jet Li movie. It's the subtitle for this movie where, like, he's a dog and the guy takes off his collar, makes him fight people. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. There's no way that's available. And then it was. So I was like, yeah, I got to grab that.com right away. And it kind of, the idea is, it came from my last job. I got fired. I was like, I don't want anyone to ever be able to fire me again. I don't like how that feels. And then it kind of grew. I was like, I don't want everyone to be able to shout at me again. Like, I'm so tired of that, where, you know, people have this power and they are able to leverage it. Like, they control, oh, you know what? If you don't do what I want, then you don't have money to feed your kids. I wanted to escape that control. Even as far back as when I was in college, you know, I was having entrepreneurship, because it was really hard to fit the mold. Like, you guys know, when you sign up for college, the first thing it says, hey, everyone who graduates from here gets a job. And then when you graduate, you go to that department. And I was like, hey guys, help me get a job. They're like, sweet, here's a link to monster.com. They got a whole list of a whole bunch of jobs you can try. And I was like, wait, that's it? They're like, good luck, bye. And I realized, I was like, man, no one's watching out for you. Like, the biggest lesson I learned is that no one cares about you the way you think they do. Like, you have this feeling, all right, I paid this college 50 grand, 100 grand, 200 grand. They're going to watch out for me. But they actually fake the statistics. What they don't tell you is that they include people that get job parking cars, people that are working at McDonald's, people that are doing anything, even if it's minimum wage, they add in that statistic. It's the same thing law schools do. They don't show the real statistic. They don't tell me people get jobs as lawyers, because if they did, no one would ever go to law school again, because the statistic is horrible. They hide all that information. And so that's like the first rude awakening you get, is that, like, you think that things would be handed your way or that getting a job is easy. And so Serve No Master really came to me as I just started realizing that you can't rely on other people, and that the more control you have over your own destiny, whether it's how you raise your kids, where you live, or how you make money, that's like true freedom for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I completely agree with you there. Like, the misconception of college, like, you're guaranteed a job if you graduate and get a degree, is just not true. Like you said, you actually have to go out there and sell yourself as a human and, like, everything you've done in terms of professional experience and whatnot. So one of the questions I had was, like, were you an entrepreneur before that story where you were fired, or was that kind of the birth of the entrepreneurial version of yourself, would you say?
I was always kind of hustling more than a fallen entrepreneur. Like, I never thought I could own my own business. I never had that thought. Even though getting fired from that job, I started like my 10th business. So by the time I was in college, I was doing tutoring on the side, and that grew, and I built a tutoring business there. And I've actually built two or three tutoring businesses each time I moved and lived in different places, but I never really thought of it as a business. Only looking back on it, I was working for myself, getting my own clients, charging my own prices, putting a website in place. And I was like, that doesn't count as a business. So it's hard to cross that bridge to go, I can do this and rely on it. I always saw entrepreneurship as a bridge between jobs, or something you did when you need to make extra money. I never really believed enough in myself. That's probably the biggest thing that was missing. I would have never done what I do now if I hadn't been fired. I wouldn't have had that belief in myself. because that's what we're taught, right? We're constantly taught, oh no, you need like the safety of a big company, or look at this sweet job, here's a salary, but the real value is all the massive health insurance stuff you get. And it's constantly making you feel like you're in the warm embrace of this big company that cares about you. But the truth is they don't. Like if they told your boss, hey, we take a pay cut so Jonathan can keep his job, like, nope, he's fired. And that's every manager for every employee everywhere. Like this idea that people are looking out for you, it's tough because we're constantly taught that, right? We're taught that in college. Like, oh, you've got an RA that's looking out for you. Oh, you've got the TA that's looking out for you. You got this teacher that cares about you. All these structures are in place, but they're not really true because you want to see if those people care about you. See what happens if you miss a tuition payment.
Yeah, I think that's a very harsh reality for a lot of people, but I definitely agree. So how long after you were fired did you decide to go all in on Serve No Master? Was there like a period where you transitioned into it, or was it just like a thought that you had kind of right away?
I didn't start Serve No Master for about 5 years. Right away, what I started was a local SEO business called Nashville SEO Solutions. I was like, I don't know how to do anything online. So I started putting ads on Craigslist, saying, who wants me to like help you rank videos or get SEO for your website? And my first client was a local massage therapist whose website was terrible. She'd spent a ton of money on it. She's like, I'm not getting any phone calls. And I was like, your website doesn't have your phone number on it. Like that's that's why I solved the case. And so my first check was for $200 and I was like, whoa, this is real money. And I used that money to buy a course on how to do SEO. And then my next client, I used that money to buy like software and training. So I really started out doing services that I didn't know how to do. And that's how I learned how to do it. I learned SEO by doing it for clients. I learned about e-commerce by working with clients. I learned about some website stuff. So I was able to get paid to learn, which is really the best way to do it. It's basically the opposite of college. Instead of paying someone else, people were paying me to learn this stuff. And that's really what I did for about 2 years before I started doing product creation and more pure online stuff. That's really where I began. That's where a lot of people start. It's just the fact, because you make money at the beginning instead of at the end, right? You make money day one, you get that check. It's not as much money as if you built a website for yourself, but boy, it's absolutely the best way to learn and to just to get started. And there's so many opportunities in that way. So that's how I started. And then I realized I was tired of client management, which a lot of people grow out of, like getting phone calls all the time. Oh, this video looks weird. Like, I didn't make that video. Yeah, but what, you know, can you do this? Or all these things that like don't really apply. And after a while you go, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want people calling me all the time. And that's when I started thinking about Serve No Master. Like, I don't even want clients that can do that kind of stuff. Because if you're totally relying on clients, then you're still vulnerable. You know, like there was a big SEO change. Google made a bunch of shifts. So I was like, I don't want to go through another training cycle. I'm out of here. So that's when I shifted full on to products and training. And that was really where Serve No Master was born, from that moment where I realized I don't want any one thing to be able to put me out of business. Like all it takes is one algorithm change. You know, you're doing Facebook pages. All Facebook has to do is one change and you're out of business. So I wanted to have more control over what I was doing. And so Serve No Master is really a constant iteration to realize any one person has too much control over me, then I continually like rebuild the business and look for like that next phase of growth and what I can do to continue to take my business to the next level.
No, you're absolutely right. I was just really in agreement with what you said about how like you don't really necessarily need any kind of infrastructure to start making your own money with clients. Like you said, with the person you landed for the massage therapist, like people out there just don't realize how easy it is today to just hop on your laptop and just find ways to make money. And even then people don't want to take action on it because they feel like they're not like masters of the field and they're afraid to go out and seek a client because they feel like they can't provide enough value. So I think that was very helpful to anyone listening, that you really just don't have to be a complete expert and have all the systems in place to get started. You know what I mean?
You only have to know more than the client. What I learned during that phase was that if you get into any type of technical discussion, like if a client starts asking about backlinks or ranking, I go, oh, this isn't going to work, because they're going to be calling with technical questions all the time. All I used to say to people is like, hey, look, here's SEO. It's like high school. Hang out with the popular kids, you get to have more friends. You don't hang out with the popular kids, you don't get more friends. You want to, here's, give me that credit card. I would just tell that story over and over again, because everyone who owns a business was probably not that popular in high school. Like I wasn't a football player. And so like, I want to be cool, swipe. And I, when I would start getting into detail about what we would do, oh, we're going to do this, we'll send you a backlink report, we're going to do these types of rankings, those clients either wouldn't close or be a bad experience. So I learned that sometimes knowing more is actually worse. It's easier to get sales, when you know just enough to make it interesting without getting technical, because then go people like, oh, you're like a wizard. You finally made it make sense to me. The technical details and the advanced knowledge, you don't really need to do it. In fact, you don't even have to do the service yourself. I would just hire other people to do it. So I only did SEO stuff myself for a few months. And then I just found other companies that I would say, and I would charge three times what they charged. And then I would just find clients. And I would just answer their questions, talk to them on the phone, have someone else do all the work.
Exactly right. Even then, you just have to be able to leverage your connections, like you just said, with taking people. Like, you literally were making money from just connecting someone to someone else without them knowing each other and going through you. So that's genius. Another thing people fail to realize. But I just want to shift into Serve No Master and like what you've made out of it, because obviously we're looking at the website right now. It's just like, it looks tremendous. The layout's awesome. Obviously it's come a long way. When you first started out, what was your vision for it?
Originally, it was just going to be a blog about me traveling and kind of just doing my thing. It's about, you know, because travel is a big part of it. To me, location independence is probably one of the big pieces of freedom. You know, like, I live on one of the most popular tourist islands in the world. My front door is 87 meters from the beach. We have 20 surfboards in the front yard. My wife is always like, hey, let's go on vacation. I was like, oh, baby, we live at vacation. I said, we live at the end of that sentence. I was like, this is where you go to vacation, not where you leave for vacation. But you know, like, where we live on the equator. So like, she's never seen snow. So things like that, you know, and there's no Disneyland here, but we're able to go wherever we want. Like, I don't have to live anywhere. We just happen to live here because we have kids and stuff and they're in school. But otherwise, you know, we can pick up. Like, next week we're going on vacation for a month. I'm going to a conference. I was like, let's just go for a month and bring the kids and just like do some cool stuff. So that freedom is what's real power. You know, I have a lot of family members who have big time jobs, make a lot of money, but their kids are in daycare and school like 10 or 12 hours a day. It's like, that's not what I want for life. All three of my kids are in the room right now. They're asleep because it's 3:30 in the morning, but they're here. You know, almost every time I do a podcast interview or work on a project, at least one kid's in the room. I had to get this special software that blocks kid talk noise from the background so you won't hear them, hopefully. But that's it. Otherwise, they're hanging. I have a small desk next to my desk where the kids can do like Play-Doh or whatever, because that's what I want. I don't want to have like office to be far away from the kids and be distant. That's just part of it, is the ability, whatever your idea of freedom is, what you really want from life, you can make happen. Like, I know not everyone wants to have kids. I mean, I'm almost 40, so it's different for me. When I was 20, my idea of freedom was, I want to be able to travel wherever I want, see any band I want, go see any DJ I want, and just like not be. So it really is about knowing what you want and then finding a way to make it happen. You know, for some people that like follow me, you know, they're grandparents and they just want to be able to like pay off their house or leave an inheritance to their kids. And some people, you're 20, you're like, I just don't want to have to work at Starbucks for 2 years while I'm trying to find a career. And so that's why you start in college. Like, it's like realizing that you got to start looking out for yourself. One of the things that blew my mind is a lot of my friends didn't go to college. And they matured so much faster. One of my friends, he worked in a slaughterhouse. That's basically probably one of the worst jobs you could have. He's like, oh yeah, I kill like 2,000 pigs a day. I was like, whoa, I don't know if I could do that. Like, you know, and he got married young, got married at 18, so he had to pay them bills. And I was like, and it matures you fast. You know, when your only way to make money is by killing thousands of animals a day, like staring at each pig or each cow's eyes as the light fades out, like, that's going to mature you. That's going to age you real fast. So you don't realize, like, when you have to make things happen and you don't know how to do it, you start getting jobs that are like horrifying. That's when you're like, I'll be a guard at the bus station at midnight. I thought about being an armored car guard for a while when I was younger. I was like, oh, I don't want to cut my hair. But like, you look at these jobs because you don't know. So you just look at the listings for what's available where you live and you feel so limited. Like, I remember I had all these friends who I was like, oh, I love anime. I would do anything to go to Japan. I lived in Japan for 2 years. I was like, hey, you can stay with me for free. All you got to do is get a plane ticket. I know where to eat on the cheap. You can stay at my place for free. All you need is a plane ticket. It's a couple hundred bucks. I know you can put that together, save it up. I'm here for 2 years. No one ever came. It's not lack of ability. It's lack of belief in yourself that holds so many of us back from the things we want to do. Everyone's like, wow, it's so magical. You live on a beach island. You must be a millionaire. I'm like, just today, we were talking to this girl who just moved to the island. Super pretty girl, friends of my wife. So obviously I wasn't talking to her because I don't need that kind of trouble. And she's like, oh yeah, I just found a baller apartment for $80 a month on the beach. She lives closer to the beach than I do. Yeah. So it's also like, you think these things, they're not true. Think about that. Like, where could you live for $80 a month in America? You can't even live in jail for that. It's like we have these mistaken assumptions that hold us back. Like, oh, you got to be a millionaire. And there's tons of islands like where I live. Like, you live in Hawaii for the same price as you can live in Alaska. Like, these opportunities are there. We just think they're not because no one tells us. Like, believe me, if you're going to be homeless, it's better to be homeless in Hawaii than it is to be homeless, you know, in the Great North in the snow.
Yeah, exactly where we are. That's crazy, though. And I think you're so true. I think it all comes down to self-belief. And I really feel like college and just like the whole culture of today, like the system, I guess you could call it, is kind of the reason for that. It just kind of makes people settle in a way. So they're not like necessarily looking to do the things that you mentioned. It's not really like, I feel like you have to be proactive about it. And a lot of people just slack off on that aspect of things.
Yeah, we're kind of trained in college to become employees because that's what our economy lots of. And so they teach you this mindset of like, oh, you just have to keep following this particular path and one day you'll get to be happy. Like, I used to think, oh, you know what, if I work until I'm like 60 or 70, I can have like a mobile home and I can go see the Grand Canyon and I can go see all these other like national parks. And like in my 60s, my golden years, I can finally enjoy cool stuff. It's like, I don't want to be old when I enjoy that stuff. Like, you know, in your 70s, you can't learn how to surf. You can't do cool stuff. It's really when you're young that like traveling is awesome. Like, it's way better. And I know that like there's this cultural shift, like millennials love experiences rather than owning stuff. Now, legally, I'm a millennial because I was born in 1980. But it's like, if you tell anyone else like a millennial that, they don't like it because they're like, damn, you're old as hell. I'm like, yeah, well, you guys made the rules. When I grew up, I was called Generation Z. Or Generation Y, I can't remember which one it was. And then they changed it to millennial. No one told me. I only found out last year. So, you know, you guys, it's a wide window, I guess. But the idea of experiences is true. Like, owning stuff is cool, but like having great adventures, snowboarding in Japan, you know, or I once had lunch with the head monk of all Buddhism in Japan. And all he did was talk about his favorite movie, Bridges of Madison County. I was like, this is crazy. He's really into bridges. He's like, oh, I've driven over the longest bridge in America. I've driven over the longest covered bridge in America. I was like, dude, you're the head of Buddhism. What are you talking about? But it's like, you don't know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? It's like so crazy, but you have these amazing memories and that's what you can really hold on to. And that's why I so much believe that when you grab hold of your destiny, you go, I'm going to try and make things work. I want to live where I want to live. I want to do what I want to do. If I want to take a day off, I don't have to tell anyone. I remember when you used to have to like ask your boss for permission, hey, can I take my birthday off? I've worked during the Super Bowl. I've worked during New Year's. I've worked on Christmas. I've worked on all these different holidays. Guess what? It sucks. And it's like, I don't want to do that ever again. Now I don't have to. Now, because I said, I'm going to find a way, then when I want to have a day off, I can. When I want to hang, I can. And that's really one of the hardest parts is that we start to get more and more restrictions. Like when you're in college, you can skip a class if you want, do something cool. Once you have a job, no way. You start getting these bigger and bigger limitations. They slowly introduce you to more and more rules as you get older. It's like as you get older, like, oh, now that you're on salary, yeah, overtime, you don't get paid time and a half. You just have to do it or fired. I used to have this job where they're like, oh yeah, guess what? You get to work an extra 2 hours every single day. So you can make more sales. You can actually make more money. I was like, yeah, but I'd like to see my family. I was like mid-20s. I used to listen to like the depressing Springsteen albums, all the songs about his dad dying in a factory. I would listen to that driving to and from work. And I was like, wait, something's wrong here. I was like, I'm way too young to be listening to suicidal dead dad music. But you get caught up in this stuff because you don't know there's another way. It's mostly college is full of people that have never been outside of college. Most people I know who are when I went to college, they went to college, they went to grad school, and they started teaching college. They'd never been out in the world. They never had to survive where they were on their own. You know, they never built their own business. Like, I used to teach at a university on a master's in business course, and I taught in a master's in marketing course. And I was like, guys, why are you letting me teach this? Are you insane? They're like, we just need a warm body to fill in and teach these suckers. I was like, all right. And I brought in all these guys that had started massive businesses. I brought in the number three guy from Spotify. Okay, talk about rich. And he talked about founding like six companies. He just sold a company to AOL for $30 million. And the whole class was like totally baffled. I was like, don't you guys want to be masters in businesses? This is a master. This guy's now the guy's like really baller. Now he looks at 20 million like it's trash. Like, Spotify is worth billions, and he's the number three dude. And he, all, and I brought in other people. The guy who taught me about online business was like, oh yeah, you know, for $5,000, you can learn how to buy and sell traffic and start making money online. I was like, what? I'm like taking all these notes. I was the teacher in the class. I got my friend to teach that lesson. That's when I got into online marketing. We think that all this stuff, and unfortunately, most of my class like didn't get it at all. They were totally missing it because they were like, no, we want to learn how to like be a mid-level manager. Like my last graduate course, you know, was on how to be a teacher, like how to teach English as a foreign language at an advanced level. Everyone else I was working with, they're like, yeah, I can go back to my job teaching high school and get a raise. I was like, what? I'm here because I want to teach at the next level. I was the only person that went into college teaching at university level and went into management because everyone else thought, oh, I'm going to go back. I can go from $7 an hour to $7.15 an hour now that I have another degree. It's like, what good is that? It sucks.
Dude, the reason Andre and I started this whole podcast is because we're in the business school and we realized that like all the school does is like trains you and grooms you to go like work at some firm and work 80 hours a week on a salary. And that's all anybody wants. Like I talked to a guy at the firm. I'm like, yeah, I started this podcast about entrepreneurship. He's like, oh yeah, that's cool. But your income will be variable based on every single month that you work. Like you don't know how much money you're going to make. I just want to have a set salary. I'm like, in my head, I'm just like, okay, you can have a set salary, but you're just waking up and working 16 hours a day. Like, what the hell does it matter how much you make? You're not enjoying life at all.
Yeah, those people are great, though, because then they could work for you. Like, I have a ton of people that work for me, and that's okay. People want security. You know, I always think, why doesn't everyone who works for me quit? They know everything I know. They know how to run entrepreneurship, how to run my business. But people like security. They like knowing every Friday that money's coming. And I totally get that, because not everyone wants it. The truth is, yeah, I can have a really bad month, but I can also have a baller month. Like I can have really big days and it's all on me. And that's the thing is that it's the failure. If you fail, it's your fault. And people are afraid of that. So you have to be able to kind of be the captain of a ship. Not everyone's meant to be that, right? Like there's people that are just great at driving the ship. Other people are great at fixing sails or fixing the motor. Other people are great at keeping the ship clean. And those roles matter. I don't belittle those people. I totally understand that. It's just those of us who want something more realize that entrepreneurship, and whether it's in the form of like inventing physical things, doing infomercials, or starting a small restaurant, whatever it is, you have the greatest opportunity for reward. Because I had this friend, he worked for a huge company, and he basically was one of three employees, and he did all the heavy lifting. The company eventually had 500 employees, was doing hundreds of millions of dollars. He's like, yeah, my boss's income increased at 100x, and he gave me a 40% raise. So it's like, my friend was getting no slice of the pie, no points, even though he was doing the heavy lifting. And that's how most companies are, right? Like you don't get rewarded in proportion to what you bring in. The company's job is to pay you enough money that you don't quit. That's it. Your salary is how much, what's the least I can pay you where you'll do your job? That's your salary. Why, when you go in for a salary negotiation, that's what they're really trying to figure out, because that's when they make the most money. When you're the business owner, you get the most rewards. Like, look, I make a lot more than people that work. Because guess what? Every time, after everyone's salary gets paid, the extra, I keep. So if everything extra is $10, I'll make us $10. Everything extra is $10,000, I keep $10,000. So you do have a lot more risk. You have a bad month, but I've had bad months, okay? The idea that you're never going to have a bad month, not sure nothing scary has ever happened, that's not true. But the difference is you're always in control. And so you can make decisions and do things to fix the problem. Like if I need more money, guess what? I can take a client. I don't want to, I don't love doing it, but I have things I can do. Things got really tight 5 years ago. When I shifted, was building Servant Master, I'd kind of taken 2 years off. I made too much money too fast. I did nothing for about 2 years. Started having kids. I was like, oh no, that's no joke. These kids are hungry every day. These kids want diapers every day. It changes how you see the world. You know what I mean? When you're just thinking about beer money or like going to a rave, like, oh, I'll just go to a rave next week. It's no big deal. But when it's like serious stuff, you change how you do it. And I started taking terrible stuff for my friends. I started writing ebooks for $800. Okay. That sucks. Now I get paid $20,000 for shorter books, but I did what I had to do. And I was like, and you got to sometimes make that decision. Like, I'm going to do whatever it takes, not have to go work for someone else ever again. You know, every once in a while, like people approach me to work for them. And I'm like, that's going to be pretty expensive. Also, I don't work regular hours. So, you know, no phone calls. It's going to be all email because I work when I feel like it. No one, I'm unemployable. Like, technically, no one can hire me because I haven't worked for anyone. My resume has 10 years of empty. And if you start reading my blog and it's like, oh, this guy hates companies. This guy dresses the way he wants. We don't need that kind of free thinker here. I'm every company's nightmare, right? But when you're the captain, you can do totally what you want. And even though, and I meet people, okay, who run businesses that are 10 to 100 times bigger than me. I was having a conversation with someone whose business is 100x the size of my business. His audience, 100 times the size of my audience. And we were talking one-on-one about doing a project together because it's not the size of your business. It's leaders recognize leaders. Like, if I'm talking to someone and they might be making 10 times more than me, but they're a number two, and they'll be like, oh yeah, you know, we do this and this. Here's my card. Oh, there's my boss. I said, you have a boss? Don't you talk to me. What are you doing? I only talk to number ones. And you could be a person of one person business, right? And you guys will be exactly the same way. Because when you start meeting someone that's like an employee, you go, oh wait, if I want to partner with you, you have to get someone else's permission. Yeah, I don't do that. Guess what? You know who I need permission from? No man. I serve no master. I do what I want. I have decision-making authority. And that's the difference. If you're number one, no matter how big your business is, you have the ability to make decisions. People that are the guy who's number two at Google cannot make any decisions because the number one guy can reverse him on any decision. That authority can be taken away at any time, right? And so that's why there's such a big difference between vice president and president. There's a huge difference between number one and number two. You think, what's your vice president? Hey, that's pretty cool. You got a lot of power. Those guys still want to be president afterwards. You're like, no, I want to be the boss. I want to have no one tell me what to do. I want to have that bigger level of authority. And that's really, once you get that taste, and once you kind of do those things and you realize, and there's this other culture problem we have in America that, like, we're never sure when we're adults. I remember being like 18 and then 25. I'm like, am I an adult yet? How do I know? When am I going to feel that? And people don't talk to you. And I'm sure you guys have experienced this. They talk to you like your kids until you're like 30. Now, the weird thing is when you go to England, when you're 18, people talk to you like an adult. That's it. It's like this moment. They go, okay, you're an adult. You're in. You be charged as an adult. You're an adult. And it was so weird for me the first time I went to England. I was like, whoa, I guess I am an adult. I was like 24. And my friend brought that up to me. He was like, why do you? He's like, you're 24, dude. You've been an adult for 6 years. I was like, no one told me. And so we don't know how to talk to people that are older than us, right? Like, we think, oh, someone's 65. And sure, you do want to talk to people that are older with a little bit of respect, but they don't get to talk down to you like they're your kid. You know, sometimes older people like to try and give me advice. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. A couple of years ago, I was teaching my daughter how to swim. And this guy's like, she doesn't like it. Why don't you stop teaching her how to swim? And I was like, oh, I got an idea. Why don't you go back in your apartment? We live on an island, okay? I watched a guy drown when I was in college. My kids are baller swimmers. My three kids are the three best swimmers on the island because guess what? I live on an island. You know, having someone else tell me what to do, I don't think so. And all these small things, right? Like the ability to tell an adult to go shove it, it takes a long time to learn that, but it feels real good. I negotiate with people that are so beyond me. I'm in negotiations with a billionaire right now. He asked me to do something this week. I said, yeah, I don't do that. You hire someone else. I said, send me my final payment. And it's simply because I don't do it. I go, you're asking me to do something outside my expertise. And normally you're like groveling, right? Like, this guy could change my life. But once you've worked with like a couple of those people, right? Like, you realize that you're capable of anything and you start to believe that. And when you believe in yourself, you get this confidence that like it's really hard to feel it because you're like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. And like the fake it till you make it thing and figuring it out. And you're in this phase, like when you're in college, like in between, because you're like an adult, but you're not making money yet. You know, your parents are paying your bills, you're living off loans, whatever it is. You're kind of in this purgatory that I think delays adulthood, unfortunately, in America. And the things you learn, most of it's crap. I'll tell you what, I've never been in a situation where someone's like, all right, what's the area of this triangle? If you don't figure it out, I'm going to take your kids. It's like, I spent all these years learning trigonometry. I wish I'd learned statistics. I wish I'd learned how to sew in high school because that's come up more often. I wish I'd learned furniture repair because I've had to fix a couch before. And it did not go well. Things that actually matter in life, like how do credit cards work? Why don't they teach us that in high school? Like the things we learn, unfortunately, they're not useful. I wish I knew how to fix a car or fix a motorcycle. Now is where I live. It's all scooters. But we don't learn useful skills enough in college anymore. They tell you, oh, and I totally understand the value of knowing history and knowing some math. But like learning statistics so you can track your business numbers and spreadsheets, I suck at that. If I was better at spreadsheets, I would probably make 10 times more money. I really struggle with that. I struggle with calendars. I struggle with scheduling. Those things that are more useful, they never cover it because like, you know, you're going to be a drone anyways. You don't even know how to, most people don't even know how to make change anymore. You know, now, like when you see cash registers, they have pictures of the items instead of like entering the numbers because no one knows what stuff costs. And then they're not allowed to count change. That's why the front of the register, the change comes out in that little change bowl, because they know the people behind it are too dumb because of our poor education to count out change. How crazy is that? I had a friend. I have this friend who's, his one skill is he's baller at counting change. And gas stations fight over hiring him. He's really, really good at change. It's the one thing he's super good at. And it literally has affected his career because they're like, oh, it's so hard to find someone who's good at counting out change. And it adds up over the day if someone keeps messing up. So it's so crazy and it's unfortunate. Like, I think college could be really useful if they taught you stuff that was useful, but unfortunately you're taught by people that don't know, you know, and there's all these things now where like, you're not allowed to give your opinions or say things people, you know, that you disagree with. All more and more of that happens. And it's like, guess what? I can tell you once a week, someone tells me something horrible. You think I get only good emails? I don't think so. When you're successful at any level, you're going to get pretty hurtful emails. That's how you know you're doing it right. You're going to get a negative review. You're going to get comments about your face or what you look like or where you live or your accent or all that stuff. And if you don't realize that's just part of the game, you know, like everyone says, oh, if you're a celebrity, right? People have to follow around, take pictures of you every time you go to the bathroom. That's the price of celebrity. It turns out that's the price even if you're a small scale celebrity like me. I'm not that famous, right? I'm not even Twitter famous. I'm like one level below that. I'm a little bit internet famous. But you start to get those things. And that's how you learn. It's these disagreements. Like recently, this girl's an intern with me, Paris, for 6 months. Now she runs about 80% of my company. And she goes, I have an idea for something. I go, that idea is stupid. And she goes, well, I want to try it. I go, fine. Made a ton of money. I go, Paris, you were right. Do more ideas. And because we had this disagreement, right? Like it totally changed our business. It changed absolutely the direction I'm going in. It changed the type of products we promote, the way we do business, who we're partnering with. And I was like, I thought that would never work. But part of it is, yeah, you're going to have disagreements and ideas you don't agree with. And you sometimes need to hear those because that's where the biggest opportunity is. Like, I don't know everything. And that's in a powerful lesson, right? When you're 18, you're like, I know everything and I'll never die. Then as you get older, like, I know nothing and death fast approaches. You totally change. And so the lessons that we really need are about having debate, are about having disagreement. And the thing is, most people, they're so unaware of reality. I'll give you a great example. A bunch of my friends are in the political niche, which is crazy. So they sell stuff like how to survive the apocalypse. My friend has this massive website. Oh, you need guns. You need to dig something into your house because the president's going to crash the economy. Here's what he used to do. 5 years ago, his website said Obama this, Obama that. When the election happened, he did copy paste, replaced Obama with Trump, switched advertising to the other party, and sold the exact same stuff to the people on the other side of the fence. He didn't change anything. And all these people are like, oh, I'm so glad I'm supporting someone who's in my party. Like, my friend doesn't care. He's not even American. He actually gave up his American passport. Okay. And he's selling to both sides of the fence. People like think, you know, you think if you buy like a pro or anti-Trump shirt, you're supporting someone who's on your side. You're not. You're supporting someone who figured out that selling to both sides is the best way. That's why arms dealers are so rich. You think they're only selling to one team? Of course not. And it's the same in every level. So we have all these, like, we don't see reality because we see what we want to see. But the truth is people will sell to both sides because they care about money more than anything else.
Dude, that's so accurate. It's just so funny because Christian and I, like, this whole time we're just like laughing and we're like mind blown by what you're saying because it's just like exactly what we're living on a daily basis. I just want to go back to one thing you said. It's like there's obviously people that are, you know, meant to be the employees or that are seeking like guaranteed money or salaries or payments every Friday. And that's totally okay. And one thing that I've heard a lot and that I definitely believe in is like, how much uncertainty you can handle and how much self-belief you could put in yourself is like determines your success as an entrepreneur. And I think like you really emphasize that in what you just said.
Yeah, there's a great lesson I learned last year from a billionaire in real estate. He said, whenever you're looking at a deal, you don't look at the potential upside, you look at the potential downside. It's like, if this deal goes bad, how bad can it hurt me? And that's why some people, they have that one deal, right? They're like, I'm going to flip a house. And they don't realize if it goes bad or if they don't sell it in the right number of days, they get smashed. And they're always chasing that super big deal. And so I have a lot of conversations where people want me to work on a project with them. And I go, oh, I can't take on that much risk right now. So like a year and a half ago, I bought my wife a business. We run a small hotel now. Guess what? There's a lot of risk with a physical business because we can have 50 people show up today. We only have room for 20 and then no one shows up tomorrow. We can't take 30 from yesterday and sell it tomorrow. So you have this whole different limitation. It's a whole different world. And so sometimes people approach you with jobs like, hey, why don't you work on this project for 6 months? If it works out, you'll start making money in 6 months. Like, yeah, I can't take on any more risk. So most projects I look at, that's actually my most important factor is how much risk can I have in my portfolio right now? So I like to have guaranteed income. I like to have certain levels of fixed income and all those things. And that's why I'm moving more and more into recurring, where you get a membership. You get a lot more for a membership, but I get more security. And so I try to have a certain number of members at that level, because then that gives me a level of security. In part, a lot of that comes from having kids and having these additional bills and kind of going through a maturity phase. But that's exactly it. Some people can handle no risk. Some people can handle small risk. It's the same thing, like where some people, they'll start out like a franchise, or they'll start out that type of business where there's less risk. They pay a lot of money for less risk. You know, like you buy a McDonald's, or you buy, I guess now it's a Chick-fil-A or whatever, any of these restaurants, they have it, the science down. You don't have to learn how to train a manager. Like, we've had to learn how to train staff. That's hard. Figuring out how to teach someone the right way to clean a room, the right way to interact with a guest without any guidance is really, really hard, because you're just figuring it out. So people pay for these templates, and they have more money and they can take on less risk, which I totally understand. And then everyone has exactly how much risk they can handle. Where you're having that moment, you're like, I'm not going to make rent this month unless I close a deal in the next 4 days. And some people cannot handle that amount of pressure. It's terrifying, right? You're like, oh, what, you know, like, I'm like, if things go really bad, I'm like, I'm 39. Am I going to have to call my dad, ask for help? Like, that's a scary thought that crosses your mind sometimes. And a lot of people can't handle it, and that's okay. If everyone could handle it, then everyone would be an entrepreneur. We'd have all these one-person businesses. It would be crazy. Like, society couldn't handle it if everyone wanted the exact same thing. So it is okay that people want to be different levels of entrepreneurs. And people, you know, some people, like Paris is my number two, and she's awesome. She runs a huge part of the business. She's not going to last forever. She wants to run her own business. She eventually wants to totally go out and do her own thing. And she's learning how to run a business by running large parts of mine. And, you know, I'm always hoping that we can keep pushing that back, because she's killing it. And, you know, her role keeps increasing and her authority keeps growing. But eventually people, they outgrow the nest. And for everyone, that's a different place. And that's okay. And other people, they just want to be a part of something. And also, some people just want to be part of a vision. They go, oh, I like the thing you're doing. I like what you believe in. I like the way you help people. I want to be a part of that. And that's okay too. So a big part of it, sometimes people get caught up in, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm better than everyone else. And I don't subscribe to that either. Okay, I only want to spend time with other entrepreneurs because I only have a finite amount of time, and that's my peers. But it just means that people need to connect with people that are on the same wavelength as them. And so certainly my friend and my social circles changed. And that's because all my other friends who are doing World of Warcraft 8 hours a day, well, I've never played that game, so I can't really talk about it, right? So then you drift away. And one of the things you learn as you like grow into business, everyone thinks, oh, you know, when you become more wealthy, you're going to change and stop wanting to be friends with your friends. But it kind of goes the other way around. Everyone thinks you've changed so much or that you're so different that they don't want to hang out with you anymore because they misperceive it. I'm always like, hey, look, I got a hotel. Any friend who wants to stay here for free, you can have one of the bucks. I offer my friends all the time, right? But people turn it down all the time because they think it's like me offering charity. I'm like, that's not charity. I'm like, that room's empty half the time anyways. You know what I mean? So it's hard when you reach that disparity. It's often people see you differently. It's not that you're different. Like, being an entrepreneur just means like, you like that feeling. It's the same way, you know, like how UFC fighters like to be in the ring, that feeling where you're like, it's all on me. Nothing else matters. That's what we really are. We're fighting in a different arena, but you feel so alive. And that's really what's exciting. Like, every penny you make, you're like, I did this. I created this. Like, when I sell a book, okay, I sell a book and I make $2 to sell a book on Amazon. I'm like, whoa, someone gave me $2 to read something I wrote. That's magical. That's a magical feeling, and that's exciting. And, you know, as that number grows, or you sell more books, you sell more products, you do more services, every time you have a success, that's you. And that's where confidence comes from, right? It's like through experience. You go, wow, I do things. Like, when I get emails, I had an email today from a lady who's like, you changed my life. I've hated my job for so long. I've already started taking action. I've already started making more money in the last 3 days. I had someone last year wrote a big post in my Facebook group. He's like, I went through your program. I'm making 60% more money. It's a total failure. I was like, what a scale. And if you follow me and you get a 60% increase in your income in 1 month, you're like, this test failed. It's like, if I don't double my income in a month, no other business is that way. Like when you work for a big company, you're like, oh, maybe I'll get a 1% raise this year, right? Maybe from seven an hour, I'll get $7.25 an hour. That's what everyone wanted when I was in high school. I'm sure minimum wage has changed, but the scale shifts so much on entrepreneurship. Now, if I can't double someone's income in a month, they're like complaining. And I was like, that's amazing to me that we're at that point where a 60% increase isn't enough to satisfy someone in 30 days, 30-day program. And that's really makes you feel good. So it's the emails you get, the people saying you meet, change their lives, all that kind of rolls into it. And it's like, I really did this. Like I played a role in transforming someone's life. And those emails, those messages, and those will keep you going is that everything is on me. And you can't say, oh, someone else helped you, right? Like, you know, sometimes you guys do something really good and then someone else like, oh, that's because your teacher helped you. That's because your friend helped you. Or that's because your parents helped you. It's like, no, dude, I wrote that book on my own. I did it on my own. I designed the cover. I did those things. That's when you really feel like you've accomplished something. It's hard when you're young because you feel like all your accomplishments are part of someone else's efforts. And until you've done something significant on your own, it's hard to get that feeling. And it kind of goes back to that feeling of being an adult or being in control. It's that when it's all on you, then you, yeah, the failures are all on you. If you don't make rent, it's all on you. But when you succeed, it's 100% you. And you can look at things and go, oh, I matter. Like in my old high school, in the library, they have a corner where they have all the books written by people that graduated from the school. And I was like, one day I want to have one of my books in that case. Now, I don't know if they have one in there now. They probably don't, right? Because my books are pretty subversive compared to traditional education. But that was like one of my dreams, right? Like I go, oh, if you have a book in here. And then, guess what? I never read any of the books in that case. I never even read the covers of them, right? Like, that's the thing. I was like, oh, it would matter to be in this trophy case that no one looks at. But we want to be significant, right? Like whether we're chasing immortality or the ability to be significant or matter in the world. I think that's why everyone now wants to have an Instagram channel be followed, because we're looking for affirmation. And it's like the best affirmation you can get is to actually like sell something, make it a difference in someone's life and get paid. Like that's the real triumvirate of awesome. And that's what we as entrepreneurs are looking for. We want that feeling of I did something that mattered and I got paid for it. Like that's when things start to feel really cool.
No doubt. And I think another aspect of that is being able to live wherever you want. Like when you said you lived in Japan for 2 years, I just want to go deeper into that. Like you just added, like, I feel like a lot of people, the only thing holding them back from living wherever they want, if they make money on their own, is just doing it. So how are you able to like overcome that and just move out to Japan?
So I've traveled a lot. Most of my life, I've always been into traveling. Even when I was like 15, I was like, I want to go. I want to see things. And the big thing is, most people are dumb. I wish there was a better way to say it. Like, they'll tell me stuff. I'm like, oh, did you research? Like, most people couldn't tell you what countries you can go to without a visa, right? They don't know what countries you can go to and stay. They don't know how long you can stay. And you can look that up on Wikipedia. It's not like it's an advanced search. And so they lack the knowledge. Like, most people, I go, well, how much would it cost you to move to Mexico, right? They don't know. There's safe places in Mexico. There's safe places everywhere. How much would it cost to move to South America? I don't know. How much would it cost to move to Hawaii? Most people don't answer that first question, but I'm one of those guys that's always looking that stuff up. I'm always looking at the price of plane tickets. I'm always looking at how to kind of make things happen, different ways to travel, whether it's traveling by like cruise ship or train or plane. I always want to know about it, even if I'm not always doing it. And a lot of it is kind of not taking that first step of pursuing knowledge. Like what we think of as knowledge and what is knowledge are two different things. Like, I mean, here's a great question. What's the cost of living in Hawaii? Most of us think, oh, you go to Hawaii, you're in the tourist area. If you drive in 10 minutes in any direction, you leave the Waikiki area, the price has dropped by about 80%. And once you move to Hawaii, you get a special card that you get charged different prices for everything. You have a special residence card, so you don't have to pay tourist prices anywhere. People don't know that. You know, like, this isn't because I'm a genius. I Googled it. Like, you know, like, I looked up how expensive it is to move to Hawaii. And I spent a month there for my 30th birthday. Stayed at my friend's house, who lived next door to Bruce Willis, living on his couch, swimming in this baller pool. And all these guys had done to live in a mansion was they'd each rented out a room. They were paying like $2,000 a month each for a room, but there were five of them, so they could afford a $10,000 a month mansion, which, by the way, was awesome. And that's really how you could actually do crazy stuff, is just by looking at it and going, how can I make this happen? So whether it's living in Japan or living in Nepal or traveling full time, you know, wherever you want to go, you look and go, okay, what are the rules? How do I have to get there? How long can I stay? A lot of places, you know, if you have a tourist visa, you could, where I live, you could stay here for 3 years on a tourist visa. You show up on a plane, you don't have to leave the country for 3 years. You leave the country for 3 years, for one day, you come back, you get another 3 years. I have friends who've been here for 15 years. And there's a lot of places like that that are amazing. And other, you know, or you can buy into the countries. You can buy a passport from like 20 countries, cost $500,000. But you could be a resident of all these different countries if you want. So it's research combined with passion. Like, people always go tell me that I'm lucky, which is probably the thing that enrages me the most, because luck is my arch enemy. I believe in manipulating the odds. Like, I've always believed in cheating. Like, I've always told my kids, it's about not getting caught. You play a board game with me, be sly, and I respect that, because that's how you, a lot of it in life is like knowing the odds and manipulating them. And luck is where opportunity meets preparation. Most people don't do that preparation. They don't put the things in place. And it's amazing. If you really look at anyone's life, almost everyone has had these crazy opportunities they've turned down, whether it's traveling to another country or going to a different college or dating their dream girl or dream boy. Like, these opportunities came their way and they did not take action, because they thought, oh, I'm not good enough, or that would never work for me, or that would work for Jonathan, but it won't work for me. It's like, guess what, dude? Moving to Japan on my own, that was scary. Moving to England on my own was scary. Going to Ukraine by myself was scary. Going to India by myself was scary. You have those thoughts where you're about to get on the plane, you're like, I don't know if I'm ready to do this. But golly, once you get there, you're like, this is awesome. And it really is a big part. The biggest part of it is the taking the effort to do the research. And looking at the numbers, you go, you could live almost anywhere in the world for $3,000 a month, live well. That's really the baseline number for a pretty sweet life. You know, whether you want to live in Vanuatu or Peru, $3,000 a month, pretty much a baller. Where I live, pretty much a baller at that amount of money. Okay. So it's, and that's what you make if you're like a garbage collector in most places, right? And that's obviously, that's a tough job. I could never do that. But, you know, that's like what we consider nothing in America. Even on $16,000, right, which is like poverty level, you can look pretty good in most places. So a lot of it is realizing what leverage is. So you think, okay, I'm working online and making $1,000 a month. Kind of sucks here. I got to live with my mom. If I move to Mexico, I can have a nice apartment, right? Like, all I got to do is change where I live to increase the value of what I make. And that's one of the steps I took. Like, my wife is always like, hey, let's move to America. I'm like, all right, but no more nannies. She goes, never mind. It's like, it's just, the price of stuff changes. Like, I was like, we're ballers here, but in America, we wouldn't be that ballers. Once you start paying for private schools and all that stuff at American prices, your money's gone. So there's, it's thinking about increasing how much you make, increasing your freedom, and then thinking, I have enough freedom. Where's this money worth the most? Where's that best exchange rate? Where does it have the most power? And because then if you can have time, you can make more money. Like, the more time you have, because your money's worth more, then you can work more and you don't have to work that second job, right, to make ends meet. That's really where a lot of people get stuck, right? Like, you're working a day job, then you're doing stuff at night. I had this friend, he started he was doing a floor cleaning business as he built his online business. He would clean floors, like concrete floors, 12 hours a day, go home, hang out with his kids, midnight to 2 a.m. work on his online business until he could eventually stop the floor cleaning thing. That's brutal, right? But if you lived in another country, you wouldn't have had to do that for as long. You could have left the day job sooner. And that could be a part of your process. So a lot of it is finding out what things cost. You're looking at what's a plane ticket cost, what are the visa rules, how long can I stay? A lot of it is they just don't want you to take a job there. But if you're working online or you're working back in your country and getting paid your own currency, they love that. I pay for everything in dollars here. Guess what? They love it because it just pumps up the local economy. A lot of it is it's just about deciding you want to do something, seeing what it costs and saying, well, how can I actually make that happen? When me and my wife first came to this island 5 or 6 years ago, the power would go out for 3 or 4 days at a time. The internet would go out for 3 days at a time. And I was like, I do webinars every day. How am I going to live on this island with no internet? And that's why I shifted into doing books on Amazon, so that even if I'm not online, those books keep selling. And now, of course, the internet's better. I'm able to do like a phone call with you guys, which is pretty good quality. But it took us 2 years of planning to move here. I said, if we're going to live here, I want to live in the best part of the country possible. So we built a 2-year plan and said, okay, I need to pivot to where I don't have to be online. And I was doing a lot of video content. And I said I was like, okay, I'll fly to the mainland once a month and upload all my videos if I have to. Or I'll send stuff on a DVD if I have to people I'm working with and they can upload it. All of that was part of my process and part of my plan. Unfortunately, you know, it's gotten better and better. They're talking about 5G. I don't know if that's really going to happen. It's probably a lie, but those things mean that those preparations weren't as important, but they were part of the process. So it's going, here's what I want, and taking action to get there and having a plan. Like, a lot of people just don't do that. We live day to day. We don't believe in ourselves. We grew up watching, whether you were watching Cribs or the Rich, Lifestyles of Rich and Famous, you're like, oh, to have a good life, I need to make $5 million a year. That's not true. And thinking that to live somewhere, to live on the beach, you have to be a millionaire. It's not true too. So a lot of it is misinformation, miseducation, being taught how to, like, the wrong ways to think, being taught, oh, don't question authority, don't look up new ideas, don't, you know, go against the rules. These are what the way you should live your life. And we get caught in that. And it's just, it's what holds us back from living somewhere awesome.
Yeah, I think your out-of-the-box thinking is actually insane, because most people, like you said, just see what they see on TV and they're like, oh, you have to be extremely rich to live in this situation, but they don't ever consider moving out of the country and just moving away from their family, which I would say is definitely very hard to do, to just, like, take a leap like that, like you've done, but it's definitely worth it once you get there, because, like you said, a lot of us millennials like seeing the world versus just being complacent and staying in one spot. I think I agree with that statement, so definitely a very interesting perspective on it, and I really, really appreciate you for sharing that. So we're going to move into a lightning round here. So basically, we'll just do a few quick questions, and we'll get you on out of here. If you have any questions for us first before we get started, you can go ahead and ask.
No, it's all good. I'm here to answer you guys' questions and hang out.
Awesome, man. So first question of the lightning round is, if you could have a dinner with three people alive or dead, who would they be and why?
Wish I had a baller answer that. I haven't thought about it forever. I mean, for me, like, number one would be Bruce Lee, because I'm passionate about two things. Number one, he was, like, the best at what he did, but also he was, like, an amazing entrepreneur. And he said things like, oh, I want to be the first, like, Chinese guy on American TV show and in movies, right? Like, he went from being good at fighting to be a movie star. And I was like, that would be very interesting to me, because I've read a lot of books or biographies. I've written books written by his wife, so I'm very interested in him. Probably Abraham Lincoln would be pretty cool to kind of get a perspective on the past. And then I would probably choose someone from, like, 2,000 years ago, not sure who, maybe like Socrates or someone, to, like, see what was really going on. Or maybe even, like, I don't know, like King Tut would be cool, but like, hey, what happened? You know, did you really get killed by a hammer? What's going on with these pyramids? Like, that stuff would be really cool to know for me.
No doubt, no doubt. Have you ever been to the pyramids in Egypt? I'm sure you probably have, honestly.
No, it's on my list. I haven't been to the pyramids. I haven't been to the Northern Lights. Those are things I want to do with the kids. You know, we're actually going on the first big family vacation in a week. So we're really going to try and see what it's like to travel with just me, the wife, three kids, and no nannies. And really, like, live on the edge. But that's on my list. You know, I've been to I haven't been to Machu Picchu yet, but I've been to Angkor Wat, back when you used to be able to go inside and touch all the temples and stuff. I didn't touch it, but everyone else did. That's why no one's allowed inside anymore. But I want to see the seven wonders of the ancient world. It's hard to do everything, you know what I mean? Like, I've never been to Tierra del Fuego. I haven't been to Antarctica yet. So there are other places I want to go. And the cool thing is, it's just like, I'm in a delay phase right now because we're having kids. We might even have a fourth kid. We probably will. I'm in negotiations with my wife right now. but it's kind of like, while you're having kids, you don't do the big travel, because it's like, you don't want to, like, have your kid, like, at Machu Picchu. Like, that's not the best place for a delivery. But once we have the kids and they're all, like, 3 years old or older, then yeah, we could do big travel again. It's just a lot more, it's a logistics thing. It's a phase thing, but absolutely, I'm still passionate about travel. We're still experimenting with it. So there's a lot of amazing places like that I still want to go. I want to see, like, every country and see all these amazing places. And there's so many places I've been, and people are like, wow, you've seen every DJ in the DJ Top 100. You've seen every band that was famous before 2005. I'm like, there's still a lot more. I'm just getting warmed up.
No doubt. So if you were in college, like our situation right now, what hustle would you go about starting so you could have that freedom to just, like, take 2 weeks and go to California or somewhere and just keep working?
The best thing you can learn is copywriting. It's the best, highest paid skill of anything else. Like, if I could go back, that's what I wish I'd learned first. It pays the most. It's recession proof. It's economy proof. There could be a nuclear war that takes out the internet. People still need signs and ads for their businesses. You know, whether it's writing radio ads, television ads, ads for your own businesses, your own sales pages. For a long time, the biggest hold on my business was that I kept having to hire people to write sales pages, and it would delay everything. And if they did a bad job, it wouldn't make any money. And so your business is always tied to someone else. But when you can write sales letters, when you can write emails, I remember the first time I wrote an email and I made $1,000. I couldn't believe it. It was so magical and crazy that that's possible to me. But it comes from this power to write words to get people to take action. And as you get better and better at that, you can do anything. And if you can write good copy or even half decent copy, you can get jobs or internships with some of the biggest entrepreneurs and online marketers in the world. And that's where you can really learn. Like when you guys at your age, you can do these internships where you learn massive stuff. All of my interns, by the time they graduate and they quit working for me, they're making $10,000 a month. They all get to that level, which is awesome. That's when they go, I don't think I can do this anymore. I'm like, yeah, I know. Every bird outgrows the nest. That's cool. I expect it. But they always are like shocked that I know it's coming. Like, no, I didn't teach you to be an employee. I taught you to be an entrepreneur. Of course, you're eventually going to want to leave. So a big part of it is looking at where what skill has the most value and opens the most doors. And if you can write copy, then you can do all these amazing things and it lets you do your own stuff. Because everyone think like I came from the content writing. I've created products and written books. And that's what I've always done first. But no one buys a book unless they like the cover, unless they like description. No one buys a course unless it has a good sales page. And it took a while and it's hard to say it, but the content doesn't matter because it won't change the sales. You don't make money from good content. You make money from good sales stuff. So the first thing I would learn is that. And that opens so many doors, whether you're going to go and do Facebook ads, whether you're going to do local marketing, whether you're going to write radio commercials. And even when you're just trying to get people to hire you, you could write a better resume. Last time I got hired for a job, I was horribly underqualified. I'd never been in management before. I didn't know what I was doing. I just convinced them because I knew how to do copy chat. Like I knew how to do sales chat. And so I was like, I talked them into a job that I should never have been hired for. And then I convinced them to pay me higher than what they said the salary was on the offer sheet. So it could really make a difference.
Yeah, that's huge. And just a quick follow-up to that is like, where would you recommend people go to learn copywriting skills, if you could think of anything on the top of your head?
Yeah, I'm passionate about copywriting. I think you can learn it for free. So if you go to my website, servedmaster.com/ultimate, I put together 600 of the best ads written over 100 years ago, which means they're all out of copyright, so you can't get in trouble for copying them. And if you just hand copy from the PDF, and I have training in it, it's all free. For the next 6 months, you just spend 30 minutes to an hour a day just copying and reading them and getting a feel, you'll learn so much. It's so crazy. You'll read an ad from like 1904 and it's offering health and fitness with the same promises you see on a P90X commercial. And you go, nothing's changed. The things people want, whether it's being more beautiful, being more attractive, seeming smarter, being better at reading, right? Like there's still offers about speed reading now that come out all the time. Those were invented 100 years ago. The stuff we want hasn't changed. And the way we respond hasn't changed. So I really put those together. That's my favorite way to learn. There's tons of courses that cost thousands and thousands of dollars. But back then, to get someone to buy something you were selling, they had to buy the newspaper or magazine, then it cut out, then it go to the bank and get a banker's draft. Then they had to go to the post office and get two envelopes and two stamps, fill them out, put everything inside, mail it away, and then wait 2 months for the prize to arrive. No one would do that now. Like, you imagine someone watching you on Instagram, they have to print out the picture, take it to the post office and do all that stuff. No one would do that. That's hard. Nowadays, it's hard enough to get people to click a button. So if you can get someone to go to the post office, then your sales letter must be amazing. So that's why I like stuff from the past more than modern things. Because modern stuff is, it's always trendy and hypey. But if you read something 100 years ago, it makes you want to buy it. That tells you how good those guys were. Because you had to leave the house, cut stuff out. That's amazing to me.
That's super helpful. We're just going to download it now and just study the shit out of that. It's 600 pages, so appreciate that. And I'm sure our audience will definitely get value from that as well.
Just to piggyback off that, like I've been doing some PR work for the past few months where I like basically just interpret people's questionnaires and repurpose it into articles. And I think like it's one, fun because you're providing value for them by like unearthing their actual story. And then two, like you said, you can just do it anywhere you want at any time you want. Like you don't have to show up to a desk and write it. So I think copywriting, if you can leverage it right, is honestly huge. So I'm definitely going to dive deeper into this for sure. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. And when you get good at copywriting, you can say like really crazy stuff. Like you could walk into Microsoft and be like, hey, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to increase your sales and you're going to give me 50% of every dollar you make this year more than you made last year. That's how the top guys negotiate. They go, hey, you made $1 million last year. All right, I'm going to rewrite all your ads. If my ads outperform every dollar over $1 million, I get 50 cents. And they get it because then the company makes $10 million, right? And this guy gets paid 4.5, but the business went from $1 million a year to 5.5. So to them, it's worth it. Like, you can negotiate at that crazy level. That's the highest level. I'm not at that level yet. That's like the absolute best guys, but there really is no limit to what you can make. And you can start out just getting paid, you know, a couple hundred dollars per project as you're learning. So I love to get paid to learn. There's always people that need sales letters written. You can start off charging like, I don't know, $300, and you're getting paid to learn. You're like, I don't know what I'm doing, but it works. And then you get to go, oh, now the price is $497. Now it's $997.
Yeah, and you don't even need like any kind of infrastructure. You literally need a laptop and a will to do the work. Like, you don't need to have an office. You don't need anything. Like, this is
crazy.
Wi-Fi connection and a laptop, honestly. It's just wild.
Yeah, you don't even need a website.
And then just like for me, even if I get paid like $20 to do my friend's homework, it's like I earned that. Like, no boss like had to wire that to me because I put in the hours. Like, I did this on my own and I got paid for it. And that feels way better to me than just like making a salary, you know?
Absolutely. Getting paid per project is definitely more fulfilling. If you're getting paid per hour, you're going to pad those hours. Like, I'm constantly dealing with that. If I don't check the screenshots and time doctor stuff for my staff, sometimes they'll start like drifting because like, oh, he didn't check last week. Maybe he won't check this week. And I used to do that as an employee too. I was like, oh, I get 20 sick days a year. Oh, I was sick 20 days this year. Like, what a coincidence, you know, whatever you get. So employees are always looking to get as much value as they can. You know, my last job, I was like, they gave me this assignment. They go, okay, we need to put together this project. It's going to take you 6 months. And I was done in 3 hours. So I was like, uh-oh, they're not going to like that. What am I going to do? I had to start taking like these big walks, and I was like, I need to take up hobbies because I'm not good at bureaucracy. I was like, they go, what do you mean you're done? And then I had to put together this trip. They're like, all right, but you have no budget. You're not allowed to spend a single dollar. And I was like, challenge accepted. 3 days later, I found free transportation, a free tour that gave tours to no one else that was tied into the funding for our project. And they were like, what the hell? They couldn't believe. And I even found that there was like a shuttle bus from near us to near them, because there were two hospitals that were partnered and we could ride the shuttle bus for free. They didn't know how to deal with it, because when you're kind of working hourly, you just go, it doesn't matter what I do. It matters how long it takes me to do it. And that's why, like, you look at anyone, like you go to the DMV, or you look at anyone who works for the government because they're unfireable. They're just filling time. It doesn't matter whether they do a good job or a bad job. And that's unfortunate. Like, that breeds the wrong, that unfortunately turns them into people that don't accomplish good stuff. But when you're getting paid per project, yeah, cross that finish line feels good.
Exactly. And one more thing I just want to piggyback on again. Like, once I were to get the skills down to a point where I would feel comfortable asking people to let me work for them, how would you go about finding people? Just social media and look for influencers and things like that?
There's two ways to do it. You could find places where you can advertise. Like, there's forums. There's Facebook groups where there's work all the time. But you could also, if you're really trying to get started out, and you have like someone you're a fan of, like you're a super fan of someone, you could reach out to them and say, like, people do that to me all the time. Cause I talk about how I have interns and stuff, and they go, oh, can I be your intern? Here's what I want to do. And this stuff, I have like, I think we have 4 or 5 interns right now. And they all started off writing a blog post interns. And one of them goes, I'd rather learn copywriting. And so she switched, and someone else shifted into course creation. She's like, oh, I really like making courses. I don't want to do blog posts anymore. I want to learn this skill. And that's fine, right? Like, I'm happy to do it. And the trade-off is, you know, they work slower or they have, you know, other things. So some of them are in college and stuff, but you can approach someone and say, I want to work with you. I want to learn how to do this, or this is what I'm working on. Can I do work for you for free and for feedback, right? Like, to get me to read your sales letter and give you feedback or rewrite with you, you got to pay me a lot of money. But if you're an intern, you don't have to pay me anything, right? Like, that's how Paris got really good. Paris is a tier 2 copywriter. So she can charge thousands of dollars a sales letter now. And how did she get there? By writing sales letters for me for free and getting feedback. And it's enduring where I go, wow, this is terrible. This is terrible. Change this. What are you doing? Right? Like, you go through that rough phase where you're still figuring things out. But if you can endure that, then you can really learn fast. So even if you do an intern thing with someone, then at the end, you can either go to someone else. Like, she does jobs for one of my friends sometimes, and she works for me full time. So you can then leverage that relationship, right? Like, if she really didn't want to work for me at all anymore, and she was like, hey, can you give me references to 10 people that'll pay me high level for sales letters? I would forward her stuff out there. Like, I've already gotten her testimonials for projects she's done for me. Like, hey, what do you guys think of the sales letter? And I'll get feedback, and then I'll give it to her because she wrote it. So how people who take you on or work with you, they'll help you grow if they're like legit. And they know that like internship is part of the process. No one expects an intern to be an intern for 2 years, right? Like I'm not a TV show or a politician. Like you get like that trade-off in value. So you can reach out to people you look up to and be like, hey, I'm learning copyright. I would like to write some content for you. Or hey, can I write some stuff for you? And what do you want in return? I just want to learn. That people respect that. A lot of entrepreneurs are like, yeah, that's awesome. So that's how you can learn most stuff. Almost everything I know, I learned from mentorships, is from surrounding myself with people that were better than me and finding ways to exchange value. Because when you pay someone for coaching, it's like the relationship's really limited. And but when you are giving them something of value, whether it's an internship or a partnership, or you have some cool resource you have access to and you kind of exchange it, then it becomes like a friendship. So like I speak to all my old interns whenever they reach out to me, even if they haven't worked with me for 10 years. I go, yeah, what's up? Sure, let me give you an introduction. No problem. I have a project, I have openings. So you develop real relationships, and then you could say to them, oh, hey, do you know anyone that can help me? And then they'll send you off to someone. Well, I had one intern who went to work for my friend who started paying him twice as much as I was. And I was like, what the hell? So needless to say, the guy goes, oh, sorry, Jonathan, I can't work for you anymore. So he started working with my friend. Then he found someone else. My friend introduced him to and doubled his wages again and left my friend in the dust. And that's okay. That's part of the game, right? Like you're an entrepreneur. So I would say that absolutely, you can start out right away. When you want to learn stuff, say, hey, I would love to intern with you. It's hard if you reach out to someone who's a full-time copywriter to ask that. But if you reach out to anyone else, whether they're like a blogger or a YouTuber, and say, oh, I want to write YouTube scripts for you, or I want to write better ads for you, I want to, you know, write your descriptions, any of those things, they'll go, oh, that's cool. Yeah, certainly. I'll let you take a crack at it. And then you learn by doing, because you can look at what changes they made. That's the biggest goal, is when someone better than you makes changes and you can see the difference and you go, oh, that's how I can make it better.
Super, super helpful. Appreciate that. Appreciate that. And so the last question of the lightning round here is just, what's one thing you know today that you wish you knew when you were 19?
Accounting. I wish I knew how money worked back then. You know, ask, if you ask 10 people in your dorm, what's an APY versus an APR? No one's going to know. That sucks, right? Like you don't know what's the difference between a savings account, an investment account, and different types of credit cards, you know, like all those things. I wish I'd understood money management better, investment, savings, that kind of stuff. As much as like the business stuff is cool, it's the accounting that's more important. Like one of the big things that I have is I get paid probably 50 times a month by different people on projects. Sometimes it's a few dollars. Someone paid me in Bitcoin last week. Like I had to figure out a way to accept Bitcoin because like I was like, wow, you guys are shady. They're like, yeah, we only pay through like sketchy wire transfers from the Middle East or Bitcoin. I was like, okay, I'll take Bitcoin. Because I've gotten a transfer from the Middle East before. Your bank calls you, in case you're wondering. If you get a wire transfer from like Oman for like a project, I didn't know because these guys were like in Europe. And I was like, whoa, you guys are definitely laundering money. Like, and I got a call from my bank the next day. They're like, yeah, what you up to, buddy? You got some money from the Middle East. Anything you want to confess? I was like, okay, let me do it. I was like, these guys were Austrian. But you get all these payments, and if you don't track it, like I was having a discussion with my team the other day. I go, I think someone owes me $1,400 that didn't pay. She's like, no, they paid last month. I was like, I don't think so. So I emailed both guys. They're like, oh yeah, we're doing payouts in 2 weeks. And that's because they wait 60 days to pay you. And it's hard to remember if someone owes you money from 60 days ago. So putting those in spreadsheets, tracking those numbers, and we try our best, right? We have so many going in. That stuff really matters, because if people can get away with paying you a little bit late or a little bit less, they'll drift. That's the stuff that I think is the most valuable. And I wish they taught, like I wish in college they would teach you that stuff, like how to do a spreadsheet, how to track your income and your outcome, and how to see what you should spend on different stuff and how much you need to save. And all those things are so powerful. And I'm still not as good at that as I want to be. That's really what I wish. Like I wish instead of learning like really advanced math stuff, I'd done statistics. Like all the people on the football team learned statistics. Well, I was doing AP calculus and stuff. Guess what? You know how often calculus comes up? Never. Never comes up in my life. Not an engineer, right? Like if you're an engineer, then it matters. But spreadsheets is actually the most valuable skill. And I struggle. Project management is the same thing for me. Like these really logical things are hard. And if you can learn that stuff, like if you can get really good at spreadsheets and crush spreadsheets, you can kill it in real estate as well. Like that was the advice I got last year from this guy I was interviewing as a billionaire. He's like, yeah, if you want to be a baller, you've got to master spreadsheets. If you're the best spreadsheet guy, you'll be your boss's number one guy, no matter what, no matter where you start in the company.
Crazy. Super valuable information, man. Appreciate it. Anything else?
Yeah, I'm honestly going to get started with this whole copywriting PDF that you put out and just really dive deep into this. So would you be willing to just give me feedback or anything if I ever was to need it? I mean, you seem like the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I spend most of my time answering emails from people that email me going, I wanted to see if you'd reply to my email. And they write really... this lady this morning wrote me a really long message. And I was like, I'll try to answer everything you ask. But sometimes I scroll through and can't answer everything. But I try. So yeah, I like to give feedback because I like helping people, and it always pays back. Because then when you're like a super millionaire, you'll set a private jet to come visit me someday. Like sometimes people that like you give small advice to end up super baller 2 years later. And like, I believe like the biggest thing I believe in for my business is networking and giving value. So like I have this massive network of contacts, and where does it come from? Relationships. And how does that happen? You just give value. Like I'm a big believer in just doing as many favors as you can, just a limitation of how much time you have. But yeah, people send in questions or ask for feedback on stuff I do all the time. That's how I learned. You know, I had people look at my stuff and say, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? What can I do better? Or what am I missing? And so I'm happy to do that. Like people can send that in, or people listening can send stuff in. I'll check it out. And if it's not me, I'll have Paris do it, because she might be a better copywriter than me already. Like she's definitely close. So we look at stuff a little bit differently, but it'll definitely be me or someone on the team who's as good as me. Sure.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it. I mean, even though we're the podcast host here, we're still very much so learning, and this was just incredible. So I appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me.
Hey guys, show some love for the Real Talk University podcast by subscribing and leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app. See you all next week.